This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Well, good evening, everyone. So, as many of you know, the Fusatsu is translated as a renewal of vows. And so, for those who have taken formal vows, it's a time to reflect and to return within our minds and then within all the parts of our body and lives to these vows. And for those who may be newer to practice, it's a time to either be introduced or to examine them from your own place in terms of where you are in your practice. In the very beginning of training, we're introduced to these vows. We chant the four great vows every evening. And so in that way, we are being introduced and, in a sense, mingling our consciousness with those great vows. For formal students, if they choose at a point, there's a time to take vows formally, and there's some students who are preparing to do that on Sunday. Because taking of vows is not just the matter of chanting a vow. It's something that happens deep within oneself. And whatever one's relationship is with a vow, whether it's a sort of getting acquainted or a casual or formal, a committed relationship, in order for it to have life, we have to give it life. And so we have to be returning to it and bringing ourselves into it, bringing these vows into ourselves. And that's part of what Fusatsu is about. And the precepts, the moral teachings of the Buddha, are based in the understanding that samsara is constraining. It's presented often in many ways as being all that we want. And that's why the Buddha said it's important to see the danger within that promise. The heart of which, the Buddha said, is the fact that it's all impermanent, but there's much more to that as well. And that to live in harmony with oneself and others, both inside and outside, is liberating. And though that is our basic nature, it's our natural nature. We don't naturally live that way. Thank you. Because in a sense, samsara makes what we might call the unnatural natural, the unfamiliar familiar, the strange, or the upside down seem right side up. I came across a teaching recently by a Tibetan master, Barwe Dorje, who lived towards the end of the 19th and early 20th century. So he's a little closer to our time. And in a way that seems a little similar to Milarepa, he would teach. He traveled a lot, wandered a lot, and he would teach often in song, as the great Milarepa would teach. And, you know, as I read his teachings, it really makes me want to have been there and to heard what that must have been like. Milarepa is said to have had a wondrous voice, a beautiful voice, which if you're going to teach by singing, you'd want to have, right? It's not just that you like singing, but... And so let's imagine that Barwe Dorje also has a melodious voice. And I just want to pull from a few parts of this song, this teaching, which he offered to one of his students who was living in a solitary retreat. And so he offered this as a reminder and encouragement to his student. And in this, he says, he sings, although you now think in your heart, so remember, he's speaking to a student, so he's speaking to each of us. Although you now think in your heart, I must definitely accomplish Dharma that will serve later. He says, you are uncertain how long you have left to live. Oh, this precious leisure and resources. Although we know better, We are mindlessly distracted. Don't you regret having wasted your life? And so he's calling out to us in song. Although we know in our heart that we want to accomplish this Dharma, and that we don't know how long we have left to live this life, and that we can be in the midst of precious leisure and resources, we are here now. We are in this time where we can do this practice. We are in this place. We are doing this practice right now. All of that is uncertain because we don't know how long we'll live. And these are just facts. These are just factual pointers. Right? Things that we might forget. Things we might want to forget. And in forgetting, something happens within our consciousness. Something happens within our practice. And so he's reminding us, although we know better, we are mindlessly distracted. Don't we regret having wasted this life? And so to live without regret, it's a wonderful thing, it's a wondrous aspiration, to live without regret. And this doesn't mean that we will live a life where we never make mistakes, or we never hurt someone. But it means to commit to a life in which we are dedicated to not living within that regret, which means we will need to do all that we can to take care of those moments when we forget, we're sloppy, lazy, we're acting within some darkness or some ignorance, and that the dedication is that we will do all that we need to do so that we don't linger in that regret any longer than we need to bring our attention back to wakefulness, to address what needs to be addressed, both internally and externally, and then to move forward more wise, more compassionate, more skillful, and less burdened. He says, if you want the true happiness of yourself and others, it is time to give up all of this negative thinking. It is time to stop all these samsaric endeavors. It is time to start thinking for yourself. And it is time to focus on the essence, the true Dharma. If you want true happiness for yourself and others, this is the great vow, then there are things that we must do. There are things that need to be attended to. There are things that we must remember and return to over and over. It is time to give up all of this negative thinking. Right? Whether you're speaking in the 19th, the 18th, the 1st, before the Common Era, it was true. We must give up all of this negative thinking. We may think of ourselves as being living in a time where we're experts of negative thinking, right? Because it's so predominant. But it's always been there. It's always been debilitating. It's always been obstructive. And so he says it's time to give us up, give it up, which means we must do all that we must. We must attend to that negative thinking so that we can give it up, right? To say it's time to give it up makes it sound like it's just like making a decision. Okay, as of now, I give it up. And we all know that there's more than that. But there must be that too. To study, to reflect, to commit, and then to vow. To dedicate ourselves, which means my mind, my intentions, my energy, my courage, my patience. What do I need to do to give up my negative thinking? First, I have to establish that I want to do that. Wanting to do that, I will then find what I need. Before then, it's going to be precarious. It is time to stop all these samsaric endeavors. What are those? What are they? These are just words. Right? That means I have to investigate. What are my samsaric endeavors? What are my endeavors that are created for the purpose of both giving me pleasure and creating suffering? In a sense, that's the definition of samsara. Is that a samsaric activity is intended to give us some degree of pleasure, satisfy something, some desire, at the very same time that it's creating suffering, and that built into that system is that it will return, and it will reoccur and reoccur and reoccur. So what do I need to do to bring that to an end? It is time to start thinking for yourself, to consider this. And of course, this doesn't just mean to follow our own whims, but that in meeting the Dharma, in meeting oneself truly, in reflecting on samsara, to come to a determination of how do I want to live this life. That's the nature of the vow. It means to reclaim our minds, right, from our conditioning, from our socialization, and that's not a small thing. Will we ever do that completely? In moments, yes. In moments when all conditioning, all conditioned thinking drops away. When the skandhas themselves cannot be found. But then there's returning. But to be dedicated to reclaiming this natural mind, and to not just to have no thoughts, but to actually think for ourselves. Bodhicitta is an enlightened thought. And so what are the thoughts that I need to be cultivating, that I need to be having? What are the thoughts I want to be thinking that will help me live this life, live such a life, so that I can focus on the essence, the true Dharma? You know, the teachings present us with the reality before our eyes, with the possibilities. It's like a banquet, like, since the ultimate banquet laid out before us, everything that we need. In a sense, there are things we need to know in order to actually just take our seat at that table. There are things we need to know in order to know how to take advantage of what is at that banquet table. And so he says, first, know the rarity of leisure and resources. And I think there what he means is the leisure of this time, that we can do this, that we're not so burdened by things that would prevent us, or so preoccupied that things would prevent us from doing something that is, in a sense, is our natural birthright, as a not just as a human being, but as a living thing, to stop. And resources, having this time and this place and this community and these teachings. To appreciate all that has come together so that all of this is here for us. Second, he says, remember impermanence and death. Being here now, do we know how fleeting it is? Do we see how quickly things change? How what was easy today becomes difficult tomorrow? What was available to us yesterday is not available to us today. Third, don't mistake the results of our actions. Understand cause and effect. Don't be surprised by what happens. Right? Everything is a result of things that have occurred in time and space, the results of minds and consciousness. What do I need to do to understand karma, to know how to work with time and space? To know how to work with situations and opportunities, to know how to work with spirit, the enthusiasm that practice thrives on. What do I need to know to learn about energy? Right, the energy that moves within our bodies and minds that makes it easier to practice, that motivates our enthusiasm, lifts. Particularly when things are difficult. what I need to know to learn how to work with people and objects. This is the stuff of our training. And fourth, he says, give up distractions if you want freedom. Of course, here he's speaking about the four great reminders. To give up our distractions. Again, you know, we think this should be easy. I don't want to be distracted. And yet over and over and over again, I reach back. We reach back to that distracted mind. And so in a sense, he's saying, don't sit at the feet of our untrained, distracted, samsaric mind. You know, it's like we wake up, we sit at the feet of that mind and say, what do you want me to do today? What is today's occupation? And so to reflect on how sincerely do each of us, do I, practice each moment, right? That's what our practice is. We speak of it all the time. The teachings speak of this all the time. They've been speaking of this for 2,500 years. How sincerely are we doing that? Not how successfully are we doing it, but how sincerely are we actually engaging in the practice of that? So now, having reflected on these reminders, he says, methodically abandon your thoughts. Energetically accomplish all good thoughts and deeds. Step by step, day by day. Release those thoughts. Become more and more adept at your own emotional being. The pleasant ones, the seductive ones, the difficult ones, the seductive ones. Step by step, day by day, become more adept at meeting memories, anticipations, worries, the many worlds that arise in the mind. And release those that bind the self, and release the self that binds those thoughts and emotions. In other words, liberate those thoughts, liberate those emotions so that they're no longer binding. Methodically, meticulously. In the Chan tradition, practice is often referred to as the method. And then he says, always be very kind to yourself. Take care of your loved ones nobly with the Dharma. Always be kind to yourself. And so here within, when we think of being self-indulgent, which, you know, in our society often is presented as a kind, as how we can be kind to ourselves, and maybe that's true for someone. For some people at certain moments, but it seems all very often our self-indulgence is lacking actual true kindness. Maybe in a sense that indulgence is the reward for not treating ourselves kindly. It's a curious thing. There are so many curious things that we do in our mind to make what is upside down seem right side up. Even when we're not acting well, when we are not acting well, especially then, be kind to yourself, which doesn't mean to ignore, doesn't mean to justify, doesn't mean to pass by. It just means be kind. Because what is the alternative? If we're not being kind, what are we being? And then what are we creating? Then what is our mind training? Then what are we bringing to self and other? And so in holding ourselves accountable, is it so important to be able to do that with kindness. In taking responsibility, to do that with kindness. In feeling remorse, the sharp point of remorse and regret, to be kind. In being tough and firm with ourselves, which sometimes we need to do that with kindness. And if we don't know how to do that, then that's something we need to learn. That's all. It may be unfamiliar to us, but it's not outside of us. And then so that we can take care of our loved ones. And so this is, in a sense, where we need to begin, because this is easier. And then he says, meditate on compassion for your enemies also, as you would for your mother. So we take care of our loved ones so that we can do that, and also so that we can begin to learn how might we have compassion for our enemies. How might we do that? What do I need to learn to be able to do that? What do I need to do to want to do that? In a sense, what I hear him saying is, take our relationships seriously. Our relationships with all of the worlds within ourselves, the relationships with the worlds of others, of an other, of a person, because they also have multiple worlds within them. The worlds of relatedness within a Sangha, relatedness to our earth. Take those relationships seriously, because those are all of the places where we're either continuing our samsaric endeavors or we're not. Where we're either further strengthening old pathways or we're opening up new ones. And he says, stop denigrating the praiseworthy and praising the unworthy. It's like, you know, to no longer be fooled by falseness, false power, false virtue, and also to not overlook real power, real virtues, right? Because sometimes what is most powerful is subtle or quiet. It doesn't always shine. He says, and harming anyone, stop harming anyone, good or bad. So if we think of the precepts in terms of the stopping action of the precepts, he's saying to not harbor a killing mind, to not indulge a stealing mind, to not allow within ourselves a sexually aggressive mind and body, to not nurture within ourselves a deceitful mind, to not trust our angry, critical mind, to not seek refuge in a blaming mind, to not seek wealth within a stingy mind. To not tolerate a defiling mind. He says, if you can, help even your enemies. And so the affirming side of the precepts teach us how to do this. Be affirming. Be of a mind and body that's affirming. Take on a way of being in the world that is giving, that is respectful. Be truthful. In other words, try and just be through and through truthful. Thoughts, words, and actions. Be clear. To dedicate ourselves to being clear, to being accepting of reality as it is. And samsara. That's the deal. We can't face reality if we don't accept samsara and learn how to face that too. To be unified, to be generous, to be harmonious, to be intimate. The precepts are teaching this. And he says, now, always call your mind to witness. Always call your mind to witness. Let your mind be a fair witness of everything, inside, everything, outside. Whether you like it or not, let it be a fair witness, unbiased. And within its bias, witness that. Be accountable to your mind and let for each of us, let our mind hold us accountable. Now, of course, they're not two. But we can work in this way. Let your mind be the witness. Change your deeds of body and speech. He means practice. What he's saying is, you can do this. What he's saying to his student is, you are doing this. Keep doing this. Change your deeds of body and speech by changing how you think. And again, of course, he's not just saying, you know, think happy thoughts. He's saying from the ground up, from the surface all the way down, examine, transform, liberate. When we realize self-nature, we see from the beginning that nothing has been distorted, that everything is affected. Let each and every thought arise from that place. When we establish bodhicitta, that's really part of the moment of that, the momentousness of that. That's a moment when we are and we have the capacity to start thinking for ourselves. Which means something very important within Buddha Dharma. Because then everything becomes subject to that radiant view. And then he concludes, wish for rest in the ultimate bliss of peace, the peace of your own original mind and body. As the thirsty wish for water, if you always keep this in mind, you will accomplish a great deal. No matter how long your cultivation of holy Dharma goes on, don't worry about that. Don't give up. Don't doubt yourself. Don't waver. Don't falter. These are words from my heart. Keep them carefully. Always keep the inexpressible in mind. Always keep the inexpressible in mind. Always keep in mind the vast sky of mind and self-nature. Keep these words sent from the heart of an enlightened being to your heart and guard them carefully.
Thanks so much for listening. The monastery's quarterly journal, Mountain Record, has a new home at mountainrecord.org. For over 30 years, Mountain Record has been offering spiritual seekers of all faiths a unique journey through words and images. Each quarterly issue delivers a thought-provoking array of classic teachings, contemporary wisdom, stunning photographs, and news from the Mountains and Rivers Order. For more information, to subscribe, or to read our open access articles, visit mountainrecord.org.